afternoon, everybody. Welcome to a special episode of Teenagers with Attitude. With me, I've got Luke.
Hi.
I'm Zach, and we have a special guest this week. We're going to be talking to Teenie Howard, one of the writing team of the MMPR Pink comic. Hey, Teenie, thank you for coming on.
Hi, thanks guys for having me.
So in case our listeners don't know much about you, I know that you won the Top Cow Comics Talent Hunt in 2013, and mm-hmm. you've been doing some work with them and also with, I think, Image as well. Do you want to talk about some of your earlier work?
Sure. I don't know how aware of the comics landscape your listeners are, so I'll try to explain it in a way that even people that aren't super into comics
that would be great
kind of get it in a joke, because I'm so used to doing comics podcasts and stuff.
Right. I don't know how aware of the comics landscape like the people on this podcast are.
Right. So this will be like a fun journey into that world. So I got started writing comics in about 2012, 2013, I decided to try freelance writing full time. And I kind of bopped around finding where I wanted to land with that. And I've always loved reading comics. They've always been my favorite thing to read. I thought forever that you like weren't allowed to write them if you weren't also an artist, which is not the case.
I think that was like in the like 60s. That was a lot more.
Yeah.
Dramatic. Yeah.
But common. I mean, I even spent so much of my life reading like Neil Gaiman and like knowing he wasn't like drawing the Sandman comics, that he was just writing them. And I somehow never put it together. And so I started like looking into writing comics because I've always been a huge fan and, you know, found some opportunities and some contests. So Top Cow is part of Image Comics. So the work I've done with Image has been through Top Cow. But yeah, I wrote a book for them called Magdalena Seventh Sacrament, and they loved it and they published it. And that was kind of my first part of my, you know, my comics writing portfolio. And from then I've done anthologies. I was just part of Secret Loves of Geek Girls, which was a big anthology of comics and prose that kind of, you know, it came out last year, and now Dark Horse Comics is reprinting it, but like Margaret Atwood is in it. So it became like a big deal. She's a hero of mine. So being in a book with her blows my mind. The fact that I'm like, someone will buy something because of her name and I'm also in there.
Right.
Sorry about it. You get me too.
We are familiar with riding coattails here. So.
So then on top of that, yeah, I've done a lot of anthology work and stuff. And then I'm working on a couple unannounced things. My other big project right now, other than Power Rangers Pink, is a book called The Skeptics from Black Mask, which is a small comics publisher. So
I was reading about that while I was trying to see what other stuff you'd worked on. And I love that, correct me if I'm wrong, but it is a group of teenagers with attitude and fake psychic powers.
Yes. Yep. I guess I can say I really like, you know, teenagers with attitude causing trouble. It's kind of a trope I'm into. So it kind of matches both Power Rangers and Skeptics both kind of match that way. But yeah. And so I've just been there working ever since. And, you know, now I'm more involved in the comics world than ever.
Well, that's awesome. I'm excited to have you on because, and you know, you kind of mentioned it, but you're right. At least for me and Luke, I read comics, but I don't actually know a ton about the industry. And that kind of takes me to my first question, which is, you know, I just reread through Power Rangers Pink 3, which that's the first one that you were on. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I saw that you were credited as the scripter. As opposed to quote unquote writer. And I was wondering if you could tell me like what that means, and you'll have to forgive me because I am not.
Well, typically the writer and the scripter or the story and the script, typically that's the same person.
Okay.
And in most of what I do, it's the same, you know, that's me. And I, you know, and I do have a certain amount of story control over Pink. What that means in this case is basically that Brendan Fletcher and Kelly Thompson kind of got the ball rolling on everything, and okay. they, you know, kind of like outlined the series and you know, wrote the first two issues and all that. And just because the process of comics can be so touch and go, they just, for time reasons, they just needed some help. And okay. So I stepped in and I'm, you know, working with them and with their scripts and with the same team and the same artist to deliver scripts. So we're all a team, you know, I'm working with, you know, their great ideas and but I also get to put in my own. So it's not like I feel like I'm, you know, like lashed to a typewriter and I have to do what anyone says. Right. You know, I basically, it was just like, imagine you hire two people to do a project and sometime into the project, you're like, this is a 3-person job.
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
That's just what happened with this. So it's great though. I'm a huge fan. Brendan Fletcher was part of an amazing run on Batgirl. Kelly Thompson writes Gem. So it was like a really cool company to be in when it comes to like writing like a cool, you know, kick butt girl with attitude who's not afraid to be female and kick butt. It was like a perfect team.
The writers that they have gotten both for Pink, obviously some great people, but also for the, I guess the mainline NPR comic. You know, Boom has, like, it's been a really good seller for Boom, and a lot of people have been quick to be like, well, because it's a nostalgia series. But, like, the writers on it have done such great stuff. So it's not like, I feel like that's kind of unfair. You guys have all done really good work. And,
oh, thank you.
Yeah, so.
And I agree. The stuff that I haven't been working on is amazing. I don't know if you guys read the little Power Rangers annual they came out with that was like some little short stories.
I have read it. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, the one about Goldar is like amazing.
So we're gonna have to talk about Goldar a little bit later, but okay. Yes, that was great. We definitely talked about Goldar's secret origin, which was probably my favorite thing out of that annual. Because I am starved for any information on Goldar.
It was great. I love that. I love the one in the very beginning. I think Kyle Higgins, the regular series writer, wrote that. The one about Jason just like having to balance being a Power Ranger with being like a normal person. And it's just him like not sleeping all week.
Yeah. So, you know, we, something that Luke pointed out when we were doing our main show, which I had not ever really realized, was when the show is airing, it was once a week. And, you know, timelines in TV. Five times a week. Yeah, once a day.
That's the crazy thing about it. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
Did five new episodes a week for like 4 months.
And like, obviously, timeline on TV shows are all messed up. But we were like, wait, does that mean that like, is there a monster attack every day in Angel Grove? And that comic kind of addressed that. And the answer, at least according to that, was basically, yes, that is how bad it is.
It's like, what is in those smoothies that they're all drinking that like keeps them going? Because I would be dead.
Yeah, it's pretty great. So I guess we'll move into it. I guess then were you a big fan of the show as a kid?
Yes, I was a huge fan of Power Rangers growing up. I still have. She's still around, thankfully. I have a grandmother who I spent a lot of time with as a little girl, and you know, she had like, she didn't have cable like we had at home, so it was like I would watch. You know, I would just like wait for something good to come on.
Oh yeah.
And so when Power Rangers came on, like at 4 o'clock, it was like the highlight of my afternoon. And Kim was my favorite. I was a huge fan of the original series. I don't know as much about a lot of the later series going on because admittedly, once Kim left, my interest like completely, I was a little kid. So I was like, I identified with Kim. I imprinted on her like I was a baby duck. And then the second she was gone, I was like, well, I Kim goes, I go. Like,
we have a guest every week and almost every single person who started watching the show when it started left around In Space because it was like, well, there's none of the original people, so what's the point? Like, so I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah, no, that's 100% how I was. And it's funny because people like Zach that stuck with it are like, oh no, In Space and RPM and all these later series are great. I'm like, yeah, but like Tommy's not in it, who cares?
right you have that character you really identify with and right. You know, once they're gone, it's like, well, Guess I'm God. And like, I think as a kid, I didn't realize what I now know as a, you know, an adult woman, which is that I really identify with Rita. So. Oh, man.
Rita's so good. We just got to where Rita is kicked off for Zed. And like, Zed is great in terms of like the acting and how terrifying he is for a kid show villain.
Sure.
But we were like, wait, how long till Rita comes back? Oh, no, come on.
Yeah.
So definitely. So I'm curious, what were there other other shows of a similar vein that you feel like influenced you? I mean, did you watch like Sailor Moon or any of that kind of stuff?
Actually, I was on a panel with Daphna, my editor, and Gunny, who does the gorgeous like the helmet covers for the comics.
Yeah.
We were all talking about that, about how like for me, one of those things I really loved about Power Rangers was that, like, I loved, like, when I could occasionally catch a replay of, like, Sailor Moon or, you know, Dragon Ball or any of those. And, like, there was this one weird little shop in my town that, like, it was in the mall and they had, like, Sailor Moon stuff. And, like, I would buy, like, the Sailor Moon comics. And, like, so I kind of had that little, like little baby Japanophile thing at an early age when it came to media. And I think even before I realized that, you know, Power Rangers was like a Sentai series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before I even realized that's what it was, I think I like sensed it on some level. It was like, okay, it's like the team and they're all primary colors and there are, it's like Sailor Moon, but there are girls and boys. And like,
it's very similar. Like the Sailor Moon mention was not a coincidence. They're super cute or close. Sorry.
What? But wow. That was
also, they are cute. Also, they're all cute. They are very cute, but
they're all adorable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think even like before, but I also loved like Captain Planet, you know, which is another show that like I loved, that I would like, whoever has the rights to Captain Planet, like I would totally write Captain Planet. just the idea of like, I grew up with those, like those teams of kids who are like, you know, it was like, for one, like I know there were a lot of team shows where it was all boys, but like, I just, being a little girl, I wanted to watch little, like I wanted to see another little girl, and it was even cooler if there were two.
Yeah,
so like, I liked Captain Planet for that same reason. The primary colored kids, each with their own Zord or power or ring or planet or whatever, all coming together to save the day. Like,
that's definitely something a lot of women I've talked to, I mean, obviously with Sailor Moon, but with this show as well, have mentioned that, like, a lot of those shows, the team of teenagers shows, have a girl, and her personality is that she is the girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, the idea that, I mean, it is only two of five, but that there was more than just one on Power Rangers was like a huge thing for a lot of girls. That I know that was a big factor in why a lot of people I know watch the show. And obviously Sailor Moon, it's just all girls. So hell yes, let's do this.
And I also mentioned before, like, with the thing, one of the things I really love about Kim is that, like, she was the Pink Ranger. She loves scrunchies and boys and fashion, and but like she also is like a, you know, epic gymnastic gymnast, and like she also, like, she's not like the team healer, she doesn't get captured all the time, like it's
right,
not
right.
she was the like the femme character, like she's definitely unabashedly feminine, but it doesn't stop her from being a good fighter, a good team member, someone who's physically skilled, someone who's able to hold their own in a fight, someone who, like, when they leave, it actually does affect the team. And it's not like, oh, she's going to have babies or whatever. Like, right. It's, yeah, you know, like she was, it was cool to me that she was, I mean, she, it was kind of like, I mean, I've also written Barbie comics and it's like that same thing. I'm like, yeah, she's pink. She's cute. She likes fashion. That doesn't detract from being, like, you know, it's not anti-feminist to be feminine. Like, it's okay to be a strong woman and like being scrunchy.
So as we've watched the through the show, and we just started into season two, one of the things that we've noticed that's really stood out is that the women are both treated as like complete equals to the team. Even when Kim is in quote unquote a relationship with Tommy, you honestly, I don't even know that they ever say the words girlfriend or boyfriend. Luke, I don't think so, right?
No, I almost feel like that would be too lewd for Power Rangers.
Yeah. Well, in whatever reason they did it, it really lends to that feeling of like Kimberly and Trini aren't like accessories to the team. Like you said, they're not just there to get kidnapped. They're not there to be the girlfriend of one of the other people. And like the fact that they, you know, can make hints to the fact that they're in a relationship, but it's never really the focus, makes such a big difference in tone of how the show treats its female characters.
Yeah.
And I was curious, like, you know, I know you write comics. I know you read a lot of comics. Are there anything, are there like small things that you would like to see done that would help with that? You know, even in like the Justice League, a lot of times when you have a female character, she's described as the woman who's dating whoever. Like, right. are there things you would do to try to change that? I'm curious because.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a great question. No, I think my crusade on this earth, like one of those things that I feel like is really important to me in comics is, I think that there is a real, I mean, certainly not a complete absence of them because I have plenty that I love, but I think that there's a tendency when you make a character who's supposed to be a hero for girls or just a female hero, that if she's going to be the only girl, she has to be like a model citizen.
Right.
Right.
And I want more girls that screw up, that suck at things, that swear, that drink, that make mistakes, that break hearts, that break buildings. Like, I mean, that stupid little, like, what three characters are you meme that's been going around lately.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
One of mine was Jessica Jones, like, because Alias is one of my favorite books of all time. And like, is she perfect? No. But when I read that book, it was one of the first times that I was like, this is like reading Hellblazer with John Constantine. Yeah. You know, it's like, finally I'm reading this like screwed up anti-hero with problems and flaws, and she's terrible to her friends and she's terrible to these guys that care about her. But like, it's not because she's like a bad girl and she breaks hearts. It's because she has problems.
Right,
it's because
right.
she's hurt and she's like
a human being.
She's a human issues. Being. Yeah. Yeah. And like, that's just so important to me. Seeing female, like, you know, I mean, I'm trying to not like dive too deep, but like, you know, Abigail Arcane from Swamp Thing or Francine from Strangers in Paradise or just like female characters that are like, they're not there to be likable, because I think it's a really powerful thing for a woman to feel like she doesn't have to be likable. And I think that's one of the things with Kim. Kim is not trying to make, and at least when I read her, Kim is not trying to make anyone like her. Kim is a human being. She has problems and insecurities and fears. And there are people that love Kim because of who she is and because she's strong and because she, I mean, the coolest thing about getting to write her in Pink is that I get to write Kim as a leader. Like, Kim is the Jason of
right
yeah
of this book. And like, it just expands and you just see more of that in the next three issues. And it's my favorite part about writing it, because it's like, I don't feel like I have to invent a new Kim that would be leader. I can write Kim as an adult and as a leader directly from the Kim we see in right. that goofy show we all loved. Like,
that's what's so great is, like, because she is not just there to be quote unquote Tommy's girlfriend. Like, she's a character who, just like everybody else, gets their turn to take charge in the show and like kick butt and make jokes. And I think that really fits, like, how she's been depicted in the comic is absolutely fitting with what's in the show. I will. One of the questions I had for you is, and I don't know if you remember this, but it's something that we've been running into over and over again as we've been rewatching the show, which is that, like, as we're watching it, we're like, yeah, Kim is like, take charge. She's awesome. But for whatever reason, all of the promotional materials and stuff for the show at the time, and also like what people typically remember of Kimberly if they haven't thought about Power Rangers since 1993, is that she's a Valley Girl or a cheerleader. Mm-hmm. And if you've watched the show, like, she's really not at all. It feels like something that they tried to use to market her, irrespective of what she actually was in the show.
Yeah, we are reading some character bio that, like, just talked about how much she loved shopping and going to the mall, and I don't think that's ever mentioned in the show at all.
Yeah.
It, yeah, I mean, I remember getting that idea from her character in the sense that I also liked shopping and fashion. And Kim had the cutest outfits because she got to wear like pink overalls and polka dot t-shirts and scrunchies that matched. Like,
right.
So like, I was like, oh, Kim is the best dressed. But I mean, Trini's also really well dressed. So whatever. She's just more subdued. I dress more like Trini than Kim now anyway.
I bring it up because like it's something that I think, like, when you're writing, and, you know, I'm not a writer, but I really like comics and superheroes. But so something I've noticed is a lot of times when you do have this ensemble cast, everybody gets broken down into their stereotype, kind of. Maybe that's not the right word, but they have, like, their cliche, sort of, where you've got, in Power Rangers, Jason's the leader, Zach is the party guy, Billy's the nerd, and a lot of people tend to remember Kimberly as the girl or the valley girl or the cheerleader. How do you, like, when you're writing a female character as part of an ensemble, how do you try to make sure that people don't think of her that way? Like, I'm just curious if there's anything you do to try to make sure people don't just throw that stereotype at the female characters.
I mean, frankly, being a woman, I just write her like a human being.
Yeah. Right. I kind of thought that,
like, being a woman, it's like I write her like I write, like, you know, sometimes she thinks like I do. Sometimes she thinks like women I know. Sometimes she thinks like my mom or like, you know, a friend that I knew growing up that I don't, you know, like I know so many women with so many different ways of thinking and being that to me, it's like, sometimes I write them like, you know, men I've known. Sometimes I write men I've known like women I've known, or men I'm writing like women I've known, you know? One of the weird things about being a writer, and a lot of writers joke about this, is like your characters start talking in your head and stuff. But like, you know, in a sense, it's like, not obviously not in like a schizophrenic way, but in a creative way, it's like, you know, it just, Kim has a voice. Like, Kim has a, there's a Kim in me, and she has a voice, and she has music she likes, and, you know, she has things that, she has ways of speaking, you know, where if I'll write a line and my editors will come back and say, can you change the line to that? I'll be like, I'll meet you halfway because half of this is not something Kim would say. And like, it's just, there's an inner, you know, you just develop them as a person. It's like, I took the Kim that Brendan and Kelly worked on, and the Kim from the show, and the Kim that I remembered, and the Kim that I saw when I went back and I was watching the show, because I definitely celebrated getting this job by eating a pint of ice cream and watching the Green Ranger Saga. And like, I took, you know, all of that together and kind of threw it into like a rock tumbler. And yeah, I mean, it's like, I think one of the best things I can do is not be mindful of stereotypes, because I think what I'm trying to, like, I mean, especially writing Kim, it's like, if I'm too worried about making it so, like, I don't want her to think boys are cute. I don't want her to think about her clothes. I don't want her to think, like, then she just doesn't ring true.
Right. Yeah. And this, obviously there are people who are better at it. I'm not saying this is always the case, but a lot of the time when men try to write strong female characters, that is what comes out, is this person who's like, no, that's too far. Like, you've gone too far the other way. It's not believable.
There is that woman, but it's like, making a strong female character is not just taking the like feminine, you know, stereotype with no inner life and putting her in a leather jacket and being well, now she's real. Like, no, she still has no inner life. She's still nothing.
Dividing them completely by the things that they're not.
Yeah.
And we talked about earlier when you said, you know, the most interesting comics character, women in comics to you are people who are real people. I was going to say it, but I forgot. Even like Wonder Woman, to me, the most interesting Wonder Woman is when she's still kind of an Amazon and she's the one who's willing to kill people when Batman and Superman aren't.
Like Infinite Crisis.
Yeah.
And they're like, you need to settle down.
Yeah, like, have her have something about her that isn't perfect. And that's how you make a superhero into a person who's also a superhero. Like, right. Yeah. I love that. So I you mentioned, you know, Kim's voice, and I actually did want to ask you about that. So what is it like to write the voice for a character that you grew up with?
Well, and specifically, like, the show is a little,
You can say it, Luke.
Badly written?
Yeah.
So how do you, like, adapt something that is maybe a little lacking in quality while still staying true to it?
So Daphna, who's the editor on the book, one of the editors in the book, said something that, like, I keep getting, and I was like, I don't know. Like, I didn't have an answer for it. And she said something when we were in Baltimore together on that panel I was talking about, and I loved it. She said, "We're trying to make the Power Rangers that you thought it was when you were a kid."
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So, like, when you're a kid and you're watching it and you're like, this isn't cheesy, this is awesome. Like, that. So we're not trying to darken it. Like, we're not making it this bleak misery story that, you know, oh, well, that was just a foolish childhood dream and this is the real life. And we're not trying to make it as cheesy, because we can all look at that now and say, okay, it's kind of cheesy. And, you know, right, there's like the goofy sound effects when Vulcan skull fall. And, like, right, we're not, you know, we're not trying to do that. But, like, to be like, it should evoke that same feeling in you that it did as a kid, where you're like, yeah, like, you're, this is cool, you're my hero. Because it's a really fun escape to sit down as an adult and to pick up the book. And even though it's not the exact same experience that it was when you were watching it when you were a kid, it gives you the same feeling.
That's actually really interesting that you put it that way, because one of our other co-hosts, Joel, is fond of saying that things that evoke nostalgia should be trying to give you the feeling you remember, not actually being the exact thing it was. Because why? Right. Why would you bother at that point? Like, right. So,
and also not perverting that nostalgia. Not like,
yeah,
not like disrupting it with like being too cynical or whatever. Like,
yeah, you right, don't need right, to do the Michael Bay Transformers no, thing where you're like, okay, well, everyone who watched this is a grown up now, so it has to be for grown ups. Like, that's not, you don't need to do that.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree there.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing.
Okay. No, I was just gonna say, sort of along the same lines of like looking at the old show, it kind of plays Calvin Ball with, I guess, the lore of Power Rangers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you guys are introducing, like, new concepts, like, you know, Kimberly getting her powers back through Zordon and that kind of thing, does Saban have any kind of, like, approval process for that kind of stuff, or any restrictions on what ideas you're allowed to do or anything like that?
Yeah. They tell us yes and they tell us no.
Okay.
It's cool because sometimes we get to establish new stuff in the canon that is now part of the canon. Like, it's now canon that, like, a ranger can get their powers back directly from Zordon if he has the energy to give. Like, we've established, you know, through the sword, like, we've established that that's a thing that they can do now. So, yes, we do work with Saban, and it's not like they were just like, oh, you know, like, they don't just, like, drop the Power Rangers off at our house and, like, go to a party.
Okay, bye. Like,
yeah. Have them there by midnight. Bye. Right. You know, we're in approval processes with them with script, and they, you know, they see the art and everything. And yeah, so anything we establish that is outside of what's established in the show, you know, new Zords getting created, Zords getting destroyed, new ways for Zordon to use his power, new things that the Power Rangers can do. Those are all established and they become canon, which is a really cool thing, because I feel like I get to actually, like, add to the mythos in a,
yeah, definitely,
real way.
So I know it happened in the second issue, but maybe you have some insight to this. And I hadn't thought about asking about it until you just said that. The idea that Goldar makes a Megazord out of, like, trashed Zords is maybe the hardest I've ever laughed at a comic book. I was wondering, do you know, like, was that something that really had to be, like, you know, talked over and over again? Or was it something that they were down with? Like, I'm really curious.
Unfortunately, that was approved before I was.
Okay, I was just curious.
So I don't know. I do love it.
Yes, it's great.
Real good.
I do love it. I was reading over number 4 today, and there's an exchange in there about it that I was just like, still really pleased with.
Oh man, I can't wait. Okay.
So yeah, like. It that I don't know what the, like, approval process on that was. I just know that I love it. Like, I love that it's like a garbage sword.
Yeah, like, literally. So, okay, so let me go ahead and ask then. So, Goldar is a character who has, I would call it minimal characterization on the original show, but he's so goofy and like with, he's goofy and evil at the same time with his voice and his visual design. And like, we have become sort of enchanted by Goldar. Like,
me too.
His whole thing. My one of our other co-hosts, Joel, I just got in the mail an oil painting of Goldar in a smoke jacket that he commissioned for me.
Oh my God. I would love to see that.
I'll put it up in the Skype chat.
Yeah. I'll get you the picture of it. So, we're kind of in love with him, but the thing is, like, there's so little to him directly in the show. You can infer a ton, but you know, there's not that much there. So, like, seeing that in issue 3 of Pink, like, you took the time to add his laugh after when he's gloating and like all that stuff. I can hear his voice when I read his lines. And I was wondering, like, how do you go about? Yeah, there you go.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to look at this
in the chat there for you. So he sent me that yesterday, and I cannot.
But yeah, how do I go about, like?
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Just everyone looked at that oil painting and just dragged everything to a stop.
Yeah, it's okay.
I know. I can't see for some reason. I got a notification about it, but
We'll get you to
that
later. But yeah, so my question is, how do you how do you go about trying to capture the voice of a character that already had a voice, but like a defined voice and cadence, basically? Is that harder or different from writing the voice of a character that like you're creating or has never been voice acted? Is that like a really different process or?
I really love reading Goldar, first of all. He's like one of my favorite characters to write in the series. Like I really, really love writing him. And like, you know, like Kim and everyone else, like, you know, when, as you know, hopefully my writing has leveled up a little from the original show writing and levels all the characters up a little.
I would say so, yes.
So if I have any crime, it's that I frequently make Goldar too eloquent. Because I just like, I want to believe that he's gotten smarter. So occasionally I have to be told to like bring it back because like Goldar's out here throwing down like $10 words. It's like, but I described, a friend of mine asked me about like writing Goldar. And I was like, the way I imagine Goldar is like, imagine you have Darth Vader's brain, but it's trapped in Skeletor's body. So like,
right, yes,
he like sounds right. Goofy and like he can only use goofy words and like he's supposed to be threatening, but he's kind of goofy. But like in his mind, he thinks he's like kind of a brilliant strategist.
Oh,
right,
yeah. There's a point in the show where he like has all their power coins. They have captured their parents and he shows up literally in Billy's friggin', in his driveway and is threatening them and then just leaves. And it's like, I love the idea of this guy who is extremely physically threatening. He does occasionally pull off really like not complicated, but like he is of, I would say,
oh, there's that oil painting.
There you go.
That's beautiful. Sorry to interrupt you. That's gorgeous.
So, like of the original villains, it definitely exudes the most competence.
Sure.
But he's still goofy as hell. And I love that you actually, I feel like you really did capture that super well. I know it's,
thank you.
It's probably really hard because yes, like you said, once Goldar starts throwing around five syllable words, maybe.
Yeah. Like I have to just like bring it back, but I try to think of it as like, instead of Darth Vader's brain and Skeletor's body, it's like Darth Vader trying to like astrally project into Skeletor. So it's like his control isn't all that complete. So it's still goofy as hell, but like, somewhere in the back of his mind, there's this like brilliant strategist voice. It's like, you're like a warrior and you're a commander and like, you can do this. And it's just like, ah, like, it's just like,
I love the idea of Goldar looking in the mirror. And he's like, okay, you can do this. You know you can do this.
Yeah. Like, I really, I don't know. I like to imagine, like, Goldar wakes up and he listens to, like, Manowar and, like, rocks out in his room by himself for a little while and, like, gets pumped and then goes out to, like, kick Power Ranger butt.
Well, and the show starts to introduce the idea that he's also really fed up with all of his superiors.
Yes. Like,
he's certain that he is the smartest person on that moon. And he's super not.
Yeah. Well, that's why I love what you guys have done with him, like, kind of going rogue. Because of course he would. Like, because right, he thinks he's the best. So I love that angle. So let me ask you, I would talk about Goldar forever, but let's move on. I have another question about something that happens in number three, which is there's a line one of Kimberly's monologues that says, Power Rangers 101, if you don't have a BFF like Trini Kwan, get one. And while we were rewatching the show, Trini was honestly like really hard to pin down into those archetypes that we were talking about, like your leader, your party animal, your smart guy. But what we eventually realized, other than being extremely eco-conscious, is that Trini's whole thing is she's everybody's best friend.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, like, I know you said Kim was your favorite, but do you have, like, fond memories of Trini? Do you remember her as kind of an influence as well? Or was that something you had to go back and just rewatch the show to,
I mean, I've always been someone who kind of wanted to be more of a perfectionist than I am. So Trini's always been super aspirational for me. Like to me, Trini, and I think Kim probably views Trini the same way, as like when I don't have my stuff together, Trini's always there for me. Trini's always there for everyone. And it's just like, it's not that Trini doesn't know how to be there for herself and take care of herself. She's just like incredibly adept, and she just has her stuff incredibly together at like being like, she's got her life down to a place where she's happy and she's able to share that happiness with others. And like, I mean, I feel like when the pressures of like being a leader and all that get, I mean, I feel like the reason Kim says that, and I'm, thank you for pointing out that line, because I really like that line. And so did the team. You know, the point of that is like, it's Kim basically being like, thank you. Like, when I don't have my stuff together, Trini does. Trini's like the ultimate lieutenant.
It, and I'm not just trying to flatter you, but it really did. Honestly, like, I was like, man, it took us like 50 episodes to figure out that was her deal. Like, I was honestly really impressed.
Yeah, there was definitely a long stretch where like, well, Trini's just kind of there, you know, and it, yeah, like Zach's saying, eventually you start to get the idea, but yeah.
So I'm that's awesome. I like that. I feel like you guys have as a team have really captured the essence of the characters. And one of the things I was going to ask you, I know you said you rewatched the Green Ranger saga. How much of the show did you rewatch when you were going to start working on it?
I watched the first few episodes, and then I realized I really wanted Tommy to show up.
weren't excited by Trini being afraid of heights?
And I was like, this is great, you guys, but like, really, I really just want Tommy to show up. So I went and watched the Green Ranger saga, and then like bounced around a little. But I watched it a lot as a kid, and I really have liked the new comics and stuff. So like, I read that, and I was like, it was weird. It was like riding a bike. I was like, oh yeah, like. I mean, it was also like, I don't think there's ever been a time in my life where I couldn't name like all of the original Power Rangers. I couldn't tell you like who was what color and who was what Zord and like, you know, Rita and Goldar. Like, I don't think it's like what putties were. Like, I don't think there's ever, I don't remember a time in my life where I didn't know that. And even when like there were, you know, 10-year periods where I didn't watch anything Power Rangers related, it's like that never left my brain. Like, it's always, right. I mean, it was just, it's such a big part of my life when I was so young. It was like, like, I could probably, like, wail out the theme song if you handed me a guitar. Like, I just...
So, I'm curious, when you did go back to rewatch it, were there any things that you said you remembered it really well? Was there anything that was really different than how you remembered it?
I did not remember Billy had a flying car.
No, neither did we!
So we didn't remember the rad bug either, but
and I messaged a friend of mine and I was like, do you remember Billy having a flying car? And she was like, what? And I was like, Billy's your favorite. And like, Billy was my other favorite. And she was like, oh no, Billy's my favorite. And I would remember that. And I'm like, I'm looking at it. Like, I was like sending her screenshots.
It's called the rad bug.
Yeah. Like, I don't know how, not only did I not remember that, but it's in like the most, probably the best remembered episodes of that show.
Yeah.
Right.
Are the teenagers. So like, that's what everyone remembers.
It's and a I was, key plot component to those episodes because they don't have their teleportation.
Right.
And nobody remembers it.
And Billy's like, oh, well, I've been working on this thing in my garage. And I was like, I have literally no remember. It was like the Berenstain Bears thing where people think that there's like an alternate universe where the Berenstain Bears were spelled the Berenstain Bears. Like
right.
Everyone remembers it one way. I was like, I feel like I am watching a version of this show from an alternate world. If you had put money on it, like if you'd been like $20, did the Power Rangers have a flying VW bug that Billy made? Like, absolutely not. No way.
So once you remember that he had a flying car, I mean, how many long fights have you had to get that into the comics?
None, but gosh, if they ever do a Power Rangers Blue series and I'm up for that, it's going to be an all rad bug centric.
That's awesome. There have definitely been a bunch of things. I don't think any of us remembered the rad bug either. The other one is that, and to indulge a little bit, is that, man, we all really thought Tommy was a super cool badass when we and not the kind of
weenie.
He's just such a, like, he really wants to be everybody's best friend and he's very sad when nobody hangs out with him.
Yeah.
But it's something that we did not remember at all. So it's good to know that everybody forgets some of that stuff. So I guess that's kind of most of the questions I had specifically about the comic. I have a question for you about kind of the show in general. So
sure.
Power Rangers has always been conscious about its diversity and it's always been good about it, like up to a point. Obviously there's some things that are kind of not great, but, one of the things that doesn't ever change is that the colors of the Rangers between series are kind of gender assigned. There are occasionally exceptions, but usually you're yellow and pink are your women. And occasionally I think there's like white is sometimes a female character as well. And the Red Ranger is always the leader and the Red Ranger is always a dude. And I was wondering, if you were going to write a new series or pitch a new series of Power Rangers that had a female lead, I wonder, what do you think would be the better way to go about it? Have a female Red Ranger or just say, fuck it, the Pink Ranger is the leader. Why does it have to be the red one?
Keep reading the series. That's my answer.
Oh, okay. Well, I didn't expect that.
Yeah, keep reading the series, and that's my answer.
I can do that. I it's just something that those are the two like traditions show that I don't see why they need to be kept up other than just that's how we've done it. So I was just curious, but okay.
Yeah. No. I think you're right about that. I don't think there's any necessity for it. I think you're totally right. Like, you know, I think it would be cool to see a dude Pink Ranger, and no, he doesn't have to be gay or anything to be the Pink Ranger. Right. He can just be like a guy, and there, you know, can be girl Red Ranger. I think that would be cool. My answer for what I would want to do is in the series.
Okay.
Well, all right then.
But so keep reading for that. But as far as like, I totally agree with you. Yeah, I think it would be cool to see those kind of traditions shifted up. I thought it was funny in the Power Rangers annual how Bulk and Skull were like the orange and the purple Ranger.
Yeah, man. I think everybody who's gone back to rewatch Power Rangers has gained a new appreciation for the Bulk and Skull's actors. Like their physical comedy is something I did not remember being that good.
It's pretty intense.
Yeah. They're pretty great. That was awesome. I love that too. I think there has been one Purple Ranger, but yeah, not common.
Six Ranger at some point, right?
Yeah. So cool. And then I guess my last question is, is there anything else in the Power Rangers universe that you feel like hasn't been explored really that you would like to, you know, pass this if you get the chance to work on anything else in the universe?
I would love to write like Rita's Rise to Power.
Yes.
Yeah.
Deep down in my heart, I'm just like a mean old sorceress. So, I think that would be like, it would be like a Rita prequel about like her rise to power. And, I think I'd want to take it to like some unexpected places and watching, you know, cause I don't think anyone's born being the kind of person that Rita is. I think you become that kind of person.
Sure.
So I'd love to see how that happened.
I mean, this is something that I just remembered the other day, Luke. There is a quick line in one of the episodes we've watched where Rita gets mad at Trini because Trini has dolls and she didn't have any when she was growing up. And she's mad about it. And yeah, I think that would be really fascinating to go into because, I mean, her dad is like an evil skeleton man. So what is that like?
Yeah. Can't really sit on dad's lap. He doesn't have a lap. It's just bones. that would absolutely be like my dream is to like really dig into that and make Rita into like a more, you know, three-dimensional character.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming on and talking to us about this.
Thank you for having me. I've
been super thrilled. Is there anything you wanted to pitch or plug to our tiny little audience?
Number four, of course. I don't know when the number four season comes out. I feel awful about that. Soon. I think it's October. But Power Rangers Pink number four is out in October. We go to number six. And it just gets cooler and cooler. I know people say this all the time, but I really every issue I've gotten to do, I feel like is even better. So I'm really happy because I feel like we're working to a really big end. And if you're interested in checking out my original work, The Skeptics is out October 26th. Talk to your local comic book store if you want to make sure they have a copy for you. And I'll be at New York Comic Con. I'll be on the Power Rangers panel on Sunday, and I think I'm doing some signings, and I'll be on a couple different panels. So if you want to find me and talk to me about Power Rangers or Power Rangers Pink, I'll be at New York Comic Con.
Awesome.
Awesome. Well, before we let you go, I do have a quick request for you.
Sure.
You talked about, you know, how exciting it is that, you know, you get to add things to the Power Rangers canon. And you know, obviously here we're not going to have any kind of ability to communicate with Saban like you guys do when you're creating something. But just
Luke,
just
I'm really scared about what you're about to ask.
I am too, actually.
Well, just for my benefit, while we have you here, if you could just tell Zach that my theories about the morphing grid are canon, I'd really appreciate it. It helped me in a lot of dumb arguments.
Actually, let me ask you real quick before we let you go. You mentioned that Saban has you know, goes back and forth on approvals process for stuff that you add to the lore or the canon of the show and the universe.
Sure.
Have you ever, is there any at all concrete answer for what the morphing grid is?
it's energy.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. As far as I understand, I always think of the Morphin grid as like ley lines. It's like a grid of power. Why it's called a grid, I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I think it's just like it's a source. But I don't know, I always think of it as some total like 90s like laser light blue grid and like
is in your head the background of your 1990s middle school portrait, basically.
Yeah, basically.
Okay, I will take that. Awesome.
That's what I imagined, but you know, if you find out I've been kicked off the book for the rest of it because of this podcast, then I guess that was wrong. Oh, so.
It's okay. Thank you so much. And yeah, check out Teeny Howard's other work and definitely read MNPR Pink.
Yeah. Or you guys can follow me on Twitter at Teeny Howard, T-I-N-I Howard, like the duck.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.